This is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring, and I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of this station. They're my views. They're the views of our guests, the views of our callers. We welcome your calls from out across America at 1-888-24-LIBERTY or here in the Central Coast of California at 464-8295. But please hold your calls. We have with us right now Don Harkins of the Idaho Observer. And, of course, I first heard about Don when I read an email somebody sent me that he was trying to alert people about this effort to stampede people into being vaccinated for smallpox. And if you stop and think about it, there are probably 30, 40, maybe 50 different diseases that can be used as biological weapons. And now we've been told for almost 30 years that there is no more smallpox in the world. Now, in fact, the government would not allow you to get a vaccination if you wanted it, because, of course, they said there was no need for it. There was absolutely no smallpox in the world. You could trust them. There was no threat. I mean, don't ask any questions. There's no threat. And now, of course, they tell us it's a terrible threat and, people are going to have to be vaccinated. And certainly they are going to forcibly vaccinate the military, about 500,000 troops. They're talking about vaccinating about 500,000 first responders, people who would work in the emergency services, ambulance drivers and people who work in the emergency rooms. Why would they do that if there's no smallpox in the world? There hasn't been a case in 30 years. Where is Saddam Hussein going to get smallpox unless we gave that to him too? Well, Don is very, very concerned about this, and especially about the compulsory concepts where, of course, some of the police have been telling people that we will force you to be vaccinated. Don, thank you so very much for being with us today.
It's good to join again, Dr. Stan.
Well, of course, this is a different audience, so you don't have to worry about saying some of the same things you said on our other program.
Oh, I never worry about that, because if you get a good line, you want to use it over and over again to
right.
get people to believe you.
Well, repetition does help people to remember. So how did you get involved in this? I mean, this is a long way from being a newspaper publisher and writer, isn't it?
Well, it is and it isn't. Of course, it's a major topic of conversation throughout the country. And besides that, it is taking in an issue that is really all-encompassing. It deals with private property rights, yourself, for instance. It deals with international law, the Nuremberg Code, and medical experimentation. It deals with medical freedom, whether or not you have the right to determine what does and does not go into your body. And so, really, all of the issues that face us in America today, the issues of increasingly centralized power in Washington, D.C., and less legislative control over our lives at the state level and at the local level where actually it belongs. And so a lot of things are coming into focus here when you have a government that decides, well, we are going to pick the crisis and we are going to pick the antidote for the crisis. And if you don't like it, we will hold you down and give it to you anyway. Put you in jail and give it to you anyway, or shoot you if you continue to resist. And those things bring up a lot of issues that don't sound very much like the America that I was pledging allegiance to in grade school several years ago.
Well, you know, of course, the interesting thing about this is if you've ever seen a planted program, I mean, every newspaper almost on a daily basis or a couple of times a week will have articles on the threat of smallpox. We hear about it on the radio. We hear about it on television. We read about it in the magazines. And this has been created. I mean, this whole threat of smallpox has been created by the mass media, by repetition over and over and over again. It soon becomes a topic of conversation. Now, they convened a group of experts down at Atlanta, Georgia, and of course they heard all the testimony, and it was their conclusion, we shouldn't be vaccinating anybody other than perhaps a few first responders, maybe at the most 40 or 50,000 people. And, you know, so then, of course, our administration and their wisdom, because they're so much smarter than the experts, are going ahead and And, of course, vaccinating our troops. They're going to be vaccinating 500,000 medical personnel if they can find anybody stupid enough to take their vaccine. And then, of course, but why don't they listen to the experts? Well, because they're so much smarter than the doctors who spent their lives studying this. They know what's best for us. And then, of course, they're talking about, even if there's one case any place in the world, why, of course, they're going to vaccinate everybody. Now, you have to understand that there are much better vaccines than the ones we have. There's a German vaccine that was given back in the 70s, an excellent vaccine, very low toxicity. I mean, you're talking, 35, 40, 50% of the people who get a shot today, and you probably know the figures better than I do, Don, get a febrile reaction and are sick for a couple of days. And there was literally almost no reaction either to the German vaccine or the Japanese vaccine that were used in the 70s, but we can't use those. We have to use those that are, of course, that we seem to have a fixation on. I suspect that if we actually were to find out who owned the companies that own the vaccine or produce the vaccine, we'd find some very strong relationships to people in key positions in government. So why don't we develop and give the people the safe vaccines that have been developed in other countries and work very, very well? That's a question I think that every American ought to ask. Why are we giving our people the most dangerous of the vaccines to begin with? So pick up the story from there, Don.
Well, for one thing, I believe that the smallpox issue places into question the entire concept of vaccination as a safe and or even effective public health policy. I believe the whole thing is medically illogical, and I think that this kind of proves it. But beyond that, we take a look back and shortly after the events of September 11th of last year, by October, we have Health and Human Services Secretary Tommy Thompson saying that they're going to quell this imminent threat for biological terrorism through reinventing smallpox, that they're going to secure a stockpile of vaccines so that, and I believe almost the exact quote is, every American's name on it. And so there was already in the hopper to take pre-existing doses of smallpox vaccine, which had been stored by the World Health Organization in a couple of different locations. One of them was in Russia, and I think the other one was in Atlanta. And there were some 65 million doses of vaccine just sitting there laying in wait. And this is the vaccine that actually was so dangerous that science and medical literature was coming out between, say, the mid-60s and the late 70s, dealing with the toxicity of it and its the smallpox vaccine's relationship to autism and diabetes and neuromyelitis, basically polio, neurological diseases such as muscular dystrophy, tuberculosis, and chromosome damage, and even sudden infant death syndrome. And so rather than admitting that the vaccine was extremely dangerous and that's why it was being pulled off, they declared the world free of the stuff, free of smallpox, and declared the vaccine a modern medical miracle and said that we didn't need it anymore. But the truth is that the vaccine manufacturers are beginning to be snowed under by liability lawsuits, and that's the real reason why it was pulled.
And, of course, what they have actually passed laws so that if you do have a complication from the vaccine, why, of course, you can't sue either the manufacturer or the doctor who gives you the vaccine shot. And yet, of course, what they're trying to do right now, of course, is saying it'll be voluntary for people who are not in the military or for people who are not, of course, first responders. The inference is there that, if we think there's going to be a major epidemic, instead of doing what the medical experts have suggested, and that is ring vaccination, they want to vaccinate everybody, and that really bothers me, especially since the new vaccine, the Dryvax, is totally experimental. Why don't we go ahead and use the Japanese and the German vaccines, which are proven and known to be non-toxic and effective? Why do we want to use something that's experimental on tens, if not hundreds of millions of Americans? I just don't understand that.
Well, it seems like I really had a great deal of fun as a opposition media journalist, which I've been, I guess, for 9 years now, is to view the world in the shape of a pyramid. Every little construct in our lives can be effectively diagrammed in the shape of a pyramid, having the the person at the top and then all the people down at the bottom that implement whatever policies are sent down from the top. And at any point along in the pyramid, you have various people, and all of those different people have different reasons why they're participating in the pyramid. And that's really no different here at the very top end. You've got people that really like to create policies that compel certain behavior. And then you got the people that administrate that behavior because they make a living at it. And then, of course, you got the manufacturers of the stuff that they're administrating, and they're just making a whole bunch of money. And on down the line until you get to your neighbor who, I suppose, wants you to get vaccinated because, dang it, I got it too. You know, it's something as really infantile and base to human nature as that. So the whole mechanism is able to go forward based on understanding everybody's part in the machinery and giving them the incentive to go forward.
Well, now, my understanding is that some of the people are really talking about basically forcing people to be vaccinated. If the order is given from Washington, D.C., the police will force them to be vaccinated. What's that all about?
Well, what really launched this, and actually since we first heard Tommy Thompson say that there's a vaccine, a smallpox vaccine with every American's name on it, which is kind of sinister sounding in its own right. It may be a cliche, and it may not. But since that time, we've been putting our minds and the minds of actually, and to be quite honest, Stan, I'm a journalist, and I've got a newspaper, and so the work of brilliant people comes to my desk, and I have the honor of deciphering a lot of the work of extremely brilliant people into lay language that I can understand, and then I have the ability then to translate it. If I can understand it, I can make everybody else understand it. And so a lot of really excellent people have been working with my wife Ingrid and myself over the last year to kind of put together the whole smallpox puzzle, as it were. And it really kicked into gear when I got a call from a friend of mine named Paul Walter in Grants Pass, Oregon, and he said, Don, I was just talking to, he said the underchief. I mean, he couldn't think of the guy's name, but he was like a captain or a lieutenant of the Grants Pass Police Department. And Paul just happened to mention to him, it was at a special city council meeting or something, and Paul happened to be there, and the subject of the smallpox vaccine came up. And Paul just told the guy, just quite decently and respectfully, that, boy, I'm not going to get that thing. There's no way you're going to plug that vaccine into me. And he said, well, Paul, if you don't, then I'll have to arrest you because you'll be a health risk to the rest of the community.
Well, of course, you would not be a health risk to the rest of the community because
yeah,
the medical experts
not.
Have said...
He'd be the opposite,
yeah,
wouldn't he?
Yeah, in fact, I know Paul, and he had told me the same story. So there really are people with a fascist mentality working within the police who, will not respect the rights of individuals to say, we're not going to do this. Now, the medical experts have said, ring vaccination. And, of course, this is how they control the world, smallpox, and certainly smallpox was a problem, much more so in the developed world where the people have limited immunity because of their poor nutrition. But, of course, this really was an amazing thing. And the question was, why, when the smallpox was eliminated, why didn't they destroy all of it in the world? Why did they keep supplies around that might fall into somebody else's hands? That it really doesn't make sense any more than the fact that the Centers for Disease Control, or the military, I'm not sure which one, sent scientists up into the tundra of Alaska or Scandinavia to dig up bodies that were frozen there in the permafrost that had died back in 1918 from the great flu epidemic, to get samples of this virus that had existed then so they could study the DNA and reconstitute that virus. Why would you want to bring a deadly flu virus that probably killed more people after the end of the First World War than died during the First World War? There were about 21 million people died during the great flu epidemic, Spanish flu, in 1918, and it's estimated that over 20 million, some people say as many as 40 million, but certainly over 20 million people died of this flu. Why not let a sleeping virus lie? Why would you go up and dig that up and bring it back and put it in the same laboratory where the anthrax, which recently somebody stole and put into the letters there that were sent to the senators in Washington, D.C.? Why would you do something like that? unintentionally. And of course, I think we have to ask why they still keep that smallpox on hand and why they're trying to frighten the American people into going along with this idea of everybody being vaccinated. When, of course, you know, unless we release the vaccine, I don't say there's any way that Saddam Hussein is going to be able to disseminate this. It would be almost impossible to do.
Well, right. For one thing, science goes forward no matter what. You know that as well as I do. A scientist dies, somebody picks up his notes, and away he goes. And it's just, science just goes forward of its own inertia. So if there's a bug and there's something left to study about it, somebody is going to go get the bug and study it. That's just pretty much, it's a human nature thing, apparently. And then also, according to the Centers for Disease Control, they put out an influenza update periodically. And it's an hour and a half, two-hour-long program that is beamed via satellite to all the public health institutions, both learning and practicing throughout the country. And it was really interesting. The one from, I think it was February 28th of 1999, preparing for the next influenza pandemic, it talked about the 1918 influenza outbreak that killed so many people. And guess where it started, according to the CDC?
Where did it start?
Fort Riley, Kansas.
Go ahead.
It began in Fort Riley, Kansas. And there's also two other outbreaks, one in, I think it was 57, 58, in 68 and 69. And I can't be sure which facilities they started at, but according to the CDC on this program, those two influenza outbreaks also started from military installations within the continental United States.
Well, now, is this written up someplace? I've never heard that before.
Yeah, that's right on. Okay, we've got copies of it here. I made a copy of it because it was such a fascinating program. It's called Preparing for the Next Influenza Pandemic. It's a CDC program. And if you want, I'll just mail you a copy.
Would you please?
I'd be happy to, because it's very fascinating. And really, what it did, and on our smallpox alert, we went ahead and did a piece that took off from that, because they were explaining how the swine flu mass vaccination disaster of 1973 prompted then President Gerald Ford to order that a pandemic preparedness plan be put together. And it was going to result in the federal pandemic preparedness guidebook. Let me see if I got that right. The Federal Guidebook to Pandemic Preparedness. And so right after 1973, the infrastructure to effectively deliver vaccines to an entire population of people and deal with casualties, you know, body bags and I mean, just all of the things that would be necessary to deal with a major pandemic, from the treating end to the prophylaxis end, which would be delivering vaccines, has been addressed. And it was kind of, the ball was apparently dropped on, and the book was never finished, but it was reauthorized, or its reconstitution, so to speak, was reauthorized by President Clinton in 1993. And they formed a group called the Working Group on Influenza Preparedness, and it was coordinated through the CDC. And they called the acronym is GRIP, G-R-I-P, Working Group on Influenza Preparedness. And so all of that infrastructure that had been developed beginning in 73 and was reinitiated here in 1993 is no doubt going into the massive, massive infrastructure that we're really beginning to see as we talk to various components of it in relationship to the coming mass vaccination against smallpox campaign.
Well, you know, there's so many serious questions about the vaccine programs. First of all, if listeners out there haven't read my July newsletter of last year, we simply go into the charts of the incidence of death from various communicable diseases during the 20th century. And although at the beginning of the 20th century, the death from these diseases was very high, by the time they got around to the measles vaccine, there were 44 children every year who died of measles. In other words, it was not very many children were getting these diseases, and the rate was following progressively. So these were not major problems at the time we started our vaccination programs, but they can't let the American people know that. If you go into the background of the AIDS epidemic, We know, for instance, they used an experimental vaccine, hepatitis B vaccine, in San Francisco on homosexuals to see if it would work, because homosexuals were very prone to hepatitis B. Of the young men who took the vaccine, 80% of them came down with AIDS, and the general population there was only 40% of homosexuals had AIDS. So why was it that those who got the vaccine had so much higher level of AIDS? Was there something in the vaccine? We know the hepatitis B vaccine has molecular mimicking, and many people who get this will have neurological problems afterwards. We know there was a cancer virus in the Salk polio vaccine in SV40, and now people are dying of the very same tumors that the animals that got this SV40 got. We know that DPT, the original DPT, diphtheria, tetanus, and pertussis vaccine, was extremely toxic as far as the pertussis was concerned. They lied for 20 years, saying there was nothing to worry about. And then, of course, they changed over to the Japanese vaccine, which is much less toxic. And, of course, it has a toxoid in there, because what you want to do is do away with the toxicity. We know that certainly Dr. Eddy had found the fact that there was actually live polio vaccine in the initial cutter vaccine given back in 1955. We know that the original swine flu vaccine, there was no reason to give it. There was no real epidemic. And I don't know how many people died of Guillain-Barré and other complications. It was a great boondoggle, but somebody made a lot of money on the vaccine. We know that certainly the Gulf War syndrome, hundreds of thousands of the young men we sent to the Gulf War came back ill. And, of course, many of them, when tested, would have antibodies to squalene. There's so many things that are going on associated with the vaccines that, of course, the original yellow fever vaccine, actually the people who took that, 25,000 came down with hepatitis because they didn't bother to check. And the serum that it had been created in actually had hepatitis B, had hepatitis infection, hepatitis virus. All that's, so much of that's covered in my July and June and July newsletters. You need to get that and verify. But right now, I certainly want to talk to our listeners and tell them about some of the items we have. And if you have not made any preparations for the possibility that there may be some problems in America, chemical, biological attacks, and I don't think it's going to be a smallpox attack at all, but I think there may be some attacks here, you want to go ahead and give the Ready Reserve Food people a call, and you can reach them by calling 800-453-2202. That's 800-453-2202. And they'll send you a list to check off to make sure you've got everything. And they'll also send you their catalogs if you need anything in the way of food or many other supplies they have. And then, of course, to build up your immunity, let me suggest Alimax. It's an allicin product. It's a pure allicin. It's the active ingredient in garlic. And I've been taking it, and everybody else has been getting sick, and I had a little sniffles and a cough for a few days, and got right back on my feet, and all my friends were laid up for weeks. Give them a call at 1-866-405-4000. That's 1-866-405-4000, and ask for Alimax. And then, of course, we hope that many of you out there will give us a call here at Radio Liberty and get our latest video. It's called 911 Contrived. It's the story of what happened back in September 11th of last year, when the day the hijackers hijacked the planes. It'll give you an entirely different view of what happened that day, and hopefully begin to let you understand the true nature of the evil we face today that's 911 contrived. A book that will really help you to understand the nature of the spiritual battle in which we're currently involved is Gary Kaw's book, The Demonic Roots of Globalism. Now, you may remember Gary Kaw's book, En Route to Global Occupation. His second book, The Demonic Roots of Globalism, goes into the very real spiritual forces, the dark and sinister spiritual forces, which have energized those people who are molding the world in which we live today. Going into the background of Masonry, Theosophy, and he actually quotes extensively from the writings of these people who have helped to mold the events of the 20th century. The Demonic Roots of Globalism by Gary Kaw will give you tremendous insight into the background of what's happening in America today. And unless you understand the spiritual forces at work, you really can't understand the unfolding of events. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR and ask for The Demonic Roots of Globalism by Gary Kaw. Well, Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course our guest today is Don Hawkins of the Idaho Observer, and right now we've got Jim calling in from Salinas. Hi, Jim, a question or comment?
Yes, my dad's only sister died in that 1918 flu outbreak.
Don't you feel good to know that we've gone and dug up that virus? Why would we do something that dumb?
Yeah, that's something that really boggles my mind to think that they want to play with fire like that.
Well, maybe we have evil people in Washington, D.C. who have an agenda, and they feel there are too many people in the world. Could that be it? Oh, of course, it couldn't be that. Weather would suggest that there are people out there who would promote genocide. Like, how many hundreds of millions of children have we financed to have aborted throughout the world in this last 30 years? But go ahead.
But I'm wondering, you mentioned that there was a alternative German or Japanese vaccine with a smallpox.
Yes, but you can't get it because you're an American citizen. You're not entitled to get that. It can be used in Germany, it can be used in Japan, but the FDA won't allow it to be used here because, of course, the people who made the Dryvax have so much money invested in that.
Why don't they want to invest in the German or Japanese?
Because we've got all this other vaccine that's been made up. We've got to use it. It's sort of like when they had the original Salk vaccine, and they knew it contained a cancer-producing virus, but they gave it anyway. They wanted to use up the supplies.
So when I was 3 years old when that came out, I was given that Salk vaccine. You're telling me then that I have a potential for cancer from that?
Right. You have the potential for a SV40 infection, and there's nothing you can do about it, and there's no test for it, and hope and pray that you are not one of the unlucky ones who does develop a cancer.
And just eat well and lead a healthy and spiritually led life.
Amen to that. Anything else, Jim?
So there's nothing that I can do to detect that or ward that off if that's in my bloodstream?
Absolutely not. I mean, they contaminated 90 million Americans with that. They can't admit it because then we'd lose confidence in the government. If you haven't had a chance to read my June newsletter, pull it down off the Internet. And we have all the original documentation on that.
And it really is important not to underscore the importance of psychoimmunology.
Well, I don't know about psychoimmunology.
Your mind
I believe your
zeal for life and the positive thinking.
Well,
and eating well and exercising and drinking plenty of purified water.
Well, I think
all of those things can mitigate the opportunity for infections to develop.
Okay.
We all have these sleepers. You know, and I'm in that category too. We have 90 million sleeping brain disorder or brain cancers awaiting to happen, but it's not probably going to be that all 90 million of us are going to get it. So there is some mitigating factors and positive outlook on life, a good spiritual sense, and real quality treatment of your body as a lifestyle will mitigate the opportunity for that to take you.
All right, fine. Thanks, Jim. And of course, I would suggest also certain vitamins, C and E, selenium, certainly zinc. There are certain things that you can do to build up your immunity. Do you have any comments on that at all, Don?
Well, there are so many things at play. Like you said, why aren't we using this thing or that thing? And it goes back to we have a power structure that, in fact, in my journalistic life, I've had the opportunity, the pleasure of looking at several different reports from the Congressional Reporting Service. Have you ever seen those things?
No, I haven't. Tell me about them.
Now, the Congressional Reporting Service is this body that sits there inactive until they get an order from Congress to prepare a report on something. And Congress will order them to prepare a report on hydrogen energy or the availability of fossil fuels or whatever. There's something before Congress. Congress orders them to prepare a report on it, and the Congressional Reporting Service, or CRS, goes out and gets all of the available data, and then impartially, nonpartisanly, goes ahead and distills a report. And then the report is submitted to Congress. And this report, the Congressional Reporting Service, as far as I can tell, is the only branch of government, the only entity within the federal government that isn't swayed by special interest motivations of one kind or another. It's just there, and it does its job impartially. Congress gets that report, and then oftentimes it will enact policy that is 180 degrees from the intelligence that was revealed through that impartial science. And so we get that here again. We've got, even though the Congressional Reporting Service didn't have anything to do with it, we had the CDC had held last summer forums in various cities throughout the country, and extremely credible and experienced people in science and medicine gave their recommendations with regard to the smallpox vaccine, and all of them had certain things to say, and then the government adopts a policy that's 180 degrees.
180 degrees opposite, right.
Yeah, no, it's phenomenal. In fact, it happens so often, and then the picture that comes out of it is almost exactly 180 degrees so often, one has to begin to think that there's a real mathematical formula that the federal government uses to enact and enforce public policy, because it's absolutely absurd. And one can't help but think that there are non-public health interest motivations involved, and it's in our best interest to investigate those, because it's about time that people start taking control of their own health and the health of their, you know, friends, family, and community, because obviously you look at the SV40, I mean, they loaded us. We've got all these sleepers with all these diseases in us waiting to explode at any time. And the fiasco, the swine flu epidemic in the 70s, we absolutely cannot trust that the federal government's policies with regard to public health are in any way a benefit to you and your family, and particularly your kids, because that's really what we're living for anyway.
And of course, they've been poisoning our children with the mercury that was in the vaccines, and they've lied on these new studies. We're going to have Barbara Fisher on next week, pointing out how they've simply come up with these phony scientific studies, because we can't let the American people know, the mothers of this country know, that they poisoned the brains of our children, infants, starting right in the very nursery when they were giving them shots, vaccine shots, that had their mercury in it, and there's no level of mercury that is safe, for the children. And so, you know, and you'll be pleased to know that the government, though, in its wisdom now, has made it so that no lawsuits can be brought against the people who prepared
right.
the vaccines, because if they were able to be sued, then, of course, who would prepare the vaccines for us? And there'd be nobody that to prepare the vaccines to continue poisoning our children. Let's
right.
go ahead and go to Steve calling from Orange. Hi, Steve. Question or comment?
Well, first, a question. I was born in the early 60s, 1964 specifically, and I
got a year on you, Steve.
What?
Go
I got
ahead,
a
Steve.
Year on you.
Right. Don's a year older than you are.
Well, anyway, I was wondering if maybe I might have gotten the SV40.
Well, let's see. By 19, what?
That was about
what,
the
what year? What year were you born?
64.
All right, fine. No, you would have got the Sabin vaccine. And so you wouldn't have got the SV40.
Yeah, and my friend Kurt and a lot of people at the office are not going to listen to common sense. They're going to be good little sheep and take the new smallpox vaccine.
Well, why don't you go ahead and give them a copy of my June and July newsletter and just ask them to read it, okay?
Well, my friend Kurt's blind.
Oh, well, of course, then you're going to have to read it to him.
Well, I don't think I could do that because I'm blind. But anyway, I'm going to email him about my intent to hold them accountable to common sense. And as I heard someone say, we have to hold them accountable to common sense and the law, rigid absolutism. They don't have to like it, but they're stuck with it. And if they go outside that, if they go outside those boundaries, the punishment is removal from office.
All right, well, you're going to have to report it to the president, but he's the one who's pushing it. Thanks so much, Steve. Let's go to Steve calling from Wisconsin. Hi, Steve.
Hi, how are you, gentlemen? This
fine.
I haven't had a chance to listen to every minute of the show, but I'm going to ask a question, and hopefully it hasn't been asked, so bear with me. But first of all, Dr. Stan, I'd like to make a statement, what I feel in my spirit. I feel that for this country, this was the last Thanksgiving and the last Christmas that we've had as we've known it throughout the years. I believe that we've got way too much coming against us.
Well, I hope you're wrong, but let's wait and see.
I do, too. I do too, but I'm just telling you what I feel in my spirit.
Well, okay. Do you have another comment?
I have a question for Mr. Harkin, and that is, when it comes to whether it be a smallpox outbreak or something along those lines, but I'll just concentrate on the smallpox right now since that's what you've been talking about. What good would it do for the government to force it at gunpoint for everyone in this country to take a smallpox vaccine of some kind if the people who have this smallpox disease have genetically altered it? That would be nothing more than a big exercise in futility.
All right, that's a good comment. Don, what would your response be to that?
Well, it's really interesting. You go back and you listen to how the flu vaccine is made every year. They go to the Southeast Asia and they look at the some 70 viruses that are floating around, and they just look into their crystal ball, pick three, and then make a bunch of flu vaccine up and pop it into vials and hope that those are the three, because it's, in order, even according to their jargon, in order for that flu vaccine to work, it's a specific antigen for a specific virus. And the same thing,
and
as far as I know, with other vaccines, you have to have the antigen for the virus. And when we're dealing with smallpox here, apparently we get into a whole new category, because we're dealing with a vicinia virus, which is not a variola virus, which is the smallpox virus. So they're planning on, and exercise in futility is almost an understatement, because according to their own jargon in vaccinology and vaccine theory, it couldn't possibly work that you give an antigen for vicinia to somebody that's going to be getting variola. And what's really interesting also is they've spent just a very, very small amount of time in the press talking about what kind of weaponized smallpox is going to be coming our way. So they've not really even said what exactly is going to be coming our way. So there's this big mass confusion between variola, vicinia, and even, amazingly, the grandpox gets thrown in there too, which is syphilis, because they're all related.
No, well, not
and
really. That's a spirochete. The other's a virus. So that's go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. I can. I'll deal with that. We'll have to talk about that another time.
Okay. We'll have to talk about that. We're going to have to take a break here.
Can I ask one last question?
No, we're out of time unless you want to hang on until after the break.
I'll hang on after the break because I want to ask one last question.
All right. Fine. And of course, really, the smallpox, the vaccinia, there is a cross immunity between the cowpox and of course smallpox, and apparently so you can vaccinate for one and control another. That was the only reason this thing worked at all. Not perfectly, but certainly it did help. But right now we're going to have to take a break, and this is the time when I have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is listener supported, and if you're out there across America listening to us, we hope that many of you will decide that you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. And for a suggested gift of at least $20 a month, you'll get our four best tapes of the month. You'll get our monthly newsletter, but more than that, you'll help us do what we do, and that is bring the news behind the news, the story behind the story, and interesting guests to people across America. So if you believe there's a problem and you'd like to become part of our team, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR. And then, of course, we ask you to go to our website at radioliberty.com, www.radioliberty.com. You can pull down our newsletters. You can pull down our archive programs. And, of course, the most cost-efficient means of increasing our listening audience is by the Internet. So tell others about our Internet programs. Many of them are archived, and if you can't listen to this program or the program later this evening, or they can listen to them anytime they want to over this coming three or four weeks that they are archived, and then of course they go into the memory bin, or you can get copies of the tapes from us. But we hope that you will tell others about our programs, you'll encourage them to become involved and to help us and to join in this epic struggle to determine whether this nation or any nation conceived under God can long endure. Again, remember our telephone number, it's 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because America truly is at war today. And then, of course, we would hope that many of you would that make it a point to copy our newsletter, to make copies of the tapes, and you can disseminate these to others. This is by far the most effective means of reaching people out across America. And we'll be back in just a moment here. Have you ever wondered what really happened at Waco? Have you ever wondered if maybe the government was not giving you the full story? Well, there is the most amazing video. It's called Waco, The Rules of Engagement, 2.5 ripping hours of the story of a government onslaught under a group of peaceable people. Now, their religion may be different than yours and mine, but they were still Christians, they still believed in the Bible, and they believed that the government would one day become their enemy and destroy them. Well, Waco, The Rules of Engagement is a video that everybody who loves freedom should see, because the ultimate conclusion is the government did not want them to come out. The government did everything they could to keep them from coming out, to antagonize them, loud music, lights all the time, to totally create a situation where they could not think clearly or would respond normally. Waco, The Rules of Engagement is currently unavailable through regular sources. Call 1-800-5-HIV-WAR right now. All right, fine. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty. And, of course, we still have Steve from Wisconsin. Steve, did you have one question?
Yes, I have one last question, and then I'll hang up and listen to the answer. And I'd like to ask the guest, is it possible also to take two different things and put them in one of these satanic test tubes, such as smallpox and bubonic plague? Put these two things together and then release that on the general populace, and I'll hang up and listen to the answer, and thank you very much.
All right, fine. What do you have a response to that, Don?
Well, for sure, it's no secret with MMR and DPT, we have triple antigen vaccines already available. And whether or not, well, geez, we've already discussed that vaccines have been contaminated with SV40. The swine flu vaccine created conditions in people's bodies that gave rise to Guillain-Barré and other disorders. And then we've got HIV delivered to the world through. We can't rule out the possibility that these vaccines will be contaminated with other things as well.
I think what Steve was asking is if you can modify the various viruses or bacteria. In other words, could you actually take the smallpox and, of course, then combine it with something like Ebola to make it much more deadly and much more infectious? And at least according to Dr. Kenneth Alabak, who was number two man with the Soviet the Biological Warfare Unit, he feels that they may have done that. I've actually talked to Dr. Alabak, and he feels that this is a very real possibility. Let's hope and pray that he's wrong. They can modify these. There are over 100 strains of anthrax bacteria. The vaccine is completely effective only in two strains. The only reason you'd vaccinate your people is if you're planning on using the anthrax yourself. And, of course, you know the strain it's going to be, because then, of course, your people would have complete immunity to it. Let's go to Ian calling from Ontario. Hi, Ian.
Hi, Dr. Stan. I think there's a lot of undeclared knowledge of this trouble with vaccines amongst the veterinary science community. A cat I had 2 years ago, I took it into the vet with a cancerous growth on its back. When the vet examined her, the first question the vet asked was if the growth was just beside the spine in the middle of the back. And the vet asked if that was the location where the cat had received its vaccination shot, and that's exactly where it had received a vaccination. Its vaccination shots continually, once each year.
It could very well be. There are lots of things out there, of course, they're not telling the American people about, because, of course, they don't want them to lose confidence in vaccines. They're very, very lucrative. And, of course, maybe they've been preparing for many years for times just like this. And the last thing they want is for the American people to begin questioning what the public health authorities say. We're from the government, we're here to help, and just roll up your sleeve. Anything else, Ian?
Thanks very much, Dr. Stan.
God bless. Let's go to Spencer here, calling from Ohio. Hi, Spencer.
Hi, Dr. Stan. I'd like to ask your guest, Don, there. Back during the Civil War, a great many of the Confederate troops came down with dysentery, measles, coughing, and they were shot through with a smallpox epidemic. Do you think that could have originated at Fort Riley, Kansas, as well?
Oh, no, I don't have. I'm not really certain.
And why would you even ask it? Was there even a Fort Riley, Kansas there at the time?
Well, there was many forts.
I see, but not Fort Riley. I mean, thanks very much, Spencer. All right, but I would like that information you did have from about Fort Riley. I'd like very much like to see
that. You'll find that program extremely, extremely interesting and revealing.
Now, one of the things you said, sent me a little newspaper you'd put out, and one of the most interesting things in that was the story of the blankets that had been given to the Indians.
Right.
And of course, the smallpox virus is a virus, and viruses do not live outside the human body for any period of time. They
right.
simply die. They have to have a host. They have to be in something, a living being. And, of course, how many of you out there in the listening audience have heard of this story of how the American troops gave the Indians blankets, and they used the blankets, and they came down with smallpox? And, of course, I always had a little uneasy feeling about that story until I, of course, read your newspaper. Would you like to talk about that?
Yeah, and if you don't mind, it's really short. I'd love to read it because it everybody that I know has the image in their heads. It was put there in during grade school about Indians receiving from the white settlers or the white soldiers blankets and that communicated smallpox to them. So everybody has this image. And so this really marvelous little story came my way from Barbara Flynn in New Jersey. And if you don't mind, indulge me for a moment. I'll just read it really quick.
Go ahead.
In the smallpox letter, which is the 8-page publication that we put out addressing this thing, printed 20,000 last week and we're out already. But it's under the little headline, Blankets for Indians. It says, a woman approached Cherub's founder Barbara Flynn at a recent presentation and introduced herself as a retired biologist. Preparing for the worst, Barbara recoiled, but the biologist reassured her that she only wanted to thank her for solving an intellectual riddle that had perplexed her since college. Many remember the story of how Indians contracted smallpox from blankets given to them by Europeans. This woman had carried the image of infected blankets around since she heard the story in her youth. When she became educated in pathology, she could not understand how blankets themselves could spread smallpox. The virus could not stay alive, in quotes, in the absence of a host, in quotes. It was not until many years later when Barbara described how Dr. Campbell's work, he's a turn-of-the-century doctor that associated the spread of smallpox to the bed bug, Simex lictularius. But it wasn't until many years later when Barbara described how Dr. Campbell's work proved that smallpox was spread by the bite of the common bed bug that the riddle was solved. Now we know it was impossible for the blankets themselves to have communicated smallpox to the Indians. Just one more historical inaccuracy associated with this disease. The blankets would have had to have been infested with bed bugs to expose humans to smallpox.
I think that was really fascinating. Let's go to Jack calling from Ohio. Hi, Jack. How are you doing?
How you doing, Dr. Stan? It's nice talking to you. It's nice to have you on the show. I have a question for you, buddy.
Okay.
Okay. I have a book here in 1920 about the smallpox vaccine.
Okay. Can you do me a favor? Can you speak up just a little bit? I'm having a hard time hearing you.
I have a 1920 book called Sanitation and Psychology by Ritchie. It's a 1920 book. 1920 when it was written. It shows that the Spanish flu came in the United States in 1889 and 1890 with veterans from Cuba.
All right, so what was the point?
Is that where the Spanish flu come from?
I beg your pardon?
Is that where the Spanish flu come from?
So I guess you're corroborating my earlier statements of the three influenza pandemics that hit this country in the 20th century. It started military installations, and you're corroborating that with a 19th century story that also began in the military?
Well, it's a book for school. It's
okay.
A military book. It was written on the Spanish-American War.
All right. Well,
okay, I think that's interesting, and especially you look at Gulf War syndrome and the illness that resulted from various, I guess, exposures to contaminants, including vaccines. And we can see that our government has been using our soldiers as medical experimentees / guinea pigs for a long time now.
Well, you know, it's really very interesting. I read an article just today, and of course, you know, after the Gulf War, the government insisted none of our men came in contact with poison gas. And General Schwarzkopf testified before Congress, none of our men were exposed to poison gas. And then, you know, of course, it came out, well, maybe a few were. We'd blown up this dump, and maybe 5,000 were, maybe 10,000 were, maybe 50,000 were. Today, the figure we had was 130,000 of our troops were exposed to a sarin gas. Now, the government lied, and they lied, and then it was, well, a few, a handful, 5,000, 10,000, 50,000. Now, the latest figure is 130,000. You really can't believe anything they say. Government, like fire, is a dangerous servant but a fearful master, and we're in real trouble. Hey, thanks so much for calling, Jack, and let's go to Daniel, who's calling from San Jose. Hi, from Salinas. Hi, Daniel.
Hi. I wanted to know about vaccinations given between 1930 and 1958. Would any of those be very concerning?
Well, which vaccines? It would depend a great deal on that.
Oh, I meant like the SB40s and...
The SB40 was in the Salk vaccine that was given from 1955 and about 1963. After that, we were given a Sabin vaccine. And of course, the polio vaccine was grown in the cultures of the kidneys at that time of a green monkey. So we got all of their cytomegalic viruses and some of those that produced progressive neurological disease, at least according to Dr. John Martin, which is why the government... afraid to tell us now they've made about 93 different mistakes when they switched back to the Sabin vaccine.
And do you think any that has...
Pardon me, they switched back to the Salk vaccine.
And did any of that lead to, like, kidney diseases? Because I've had 3 transplants so far.
I really can't tell you, you know, I don't know anything about that. I'm just not in a position to comment on it. Okay?
Okay, thank you very
much. Okay, fine. Thank you, Daniel. There are a lot of unanswered questions out there, but we do know that the incidence of autism, of autoimmune disease, of allergies, and juvenile diabetes has increased significantly since we started giving the childhood vaccines, and I seem to be, there's very little question in my mind, there's a relationship between autism and the MMR and the DPT vaccine. We're just about out of time. Don, you would like to give your telephone number or a web page so people would know how to get in touch with you?
Oh, sure. You can get a hold of me by calling area code 208-255-2307. We're the Idaho Observer newspaper. We're about to begin our 7th year. And also just recently, in response to this smallpox alert, we put out a smallpox alert. And it's really interesting. It gives a very good background into the history of vaccinology, particularly with regard to smallpox. And we've got Ed Jenner on one hand that created the vaccine in 1796. And then we've got Dr. Charles Campbell, who attributed the spread of smallpox to the common bedbug. And it's fascinating material. And you can find us online at www.idaho-observer.com. And either way, we're moving the smallpox alert quite a bit. It's been a really marvelous educational tool, and we're proud to be adding that into the mix of public discussion.
All right. Well, God bless you. Thanks so much for being with us, Don.
God bless you too, Stan, and thanks for having me.
Right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, fine. That was Don Harkins of the Idaho Observer. And, of course, idaho-observer.com if you'd like to go to his website. And so please pray for our Radio Liberty, for our provision and protection. And we'll be back with you on Monday. Until then, may the Lord be with you.
have Spencer on anymore.
No.
Yeah, he's just there to disrupt the program. So, you know, just to tell him that we're not taking any calls or something. He calls in. I just told him that I just said that we weren't going to put him on anymore.
Okay.
And so we'll see you next week.
Ooh, it's chilly.